Good morning. This is Dr. Matthew Dunn, host of The Future of Email. My guest today, Wendy Pace, head owner, et cetera, of Pace Setting Media. Did I get that right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, we haven't talked before, Wendy. So thanks for coming on the podcast, and I'm looking forward to getting to know you a bit. Tell me a bit about Pace Setting Media.
Pace Setting Media was started 9 years ago this July. It was a reaction to a change in my whole life. My son was leaving for college and my daughter has epilepsy and I had to be home because I was in corporate marketing and I was traveling and covering, you know, US, Canada, Brazil,
and
Australia. So yeah,
that's
had to
tell
to stay home.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not a quick, you know, flight home if I was needed. So
if you were needed, yeah.
So yeah, I just kind of was waiting for a sign from the gods above, like, what should I be doing with this? And a friend of mine who's also in marketing said that she was looking to have a more robust social media presence. And at that time, this is 2015. So businesses were just starting to get started using social media as a platform for marketing. We were moving away from the pictures of people's cheesecakes and puppies and going into what is this tool and how do businesses use it. So I hit a sweet spot and I figured if there was one company looking for this service, there was five. I just had to find those five and I did.
And you did. Yeah. Nine years. Congratulations. That means means it's working. If someone said, I have no idea what social media is, explain it to me, what would you say?
That's a great question because it's so many things now, right? It has evolved into this be-all world where we all sit online. I would say go back to the days of the coffee shop where you would meet up or see a friend and get caught up and go on your way. Okay. That's social media online in basics.
Okay. Right?
In its simplest format. It is everybody sitting there with their coffee cup with a screen in front of each other, telling stories about their lives, and hoping you believe what they're saying.
Okay. Okay. There you go. There's a case in front of the Supreme Court right now. Don't delve into politics in these conversations, but it's media related. Two of the U.S. states are in a nutshell, they have laws that would give them a more active role in what social media companies can and can't do in the way of content moderation. And I think the question up in front of the Supremes is under Section 230. Of the DMCA, is that fair play or is that overreach? And I use that as a springboard to throw this question at you. Coffee shop analogy, decent, but social media, the coffee shop manager is deciding who listens to what conversations.
Very much so.
Very much so.
Actually, I don't even think it's the managers that are listening. It's the algorithm. So it's even a step above the human element.
See, it's even a step above, right. Yeah. Yeah.
So, one of the things that, and that's why I said in whether you believe what's being said or not, because with AI, and to me, AI is not intelligence. It is a more robust search engine. It is a search engine that is taking more things into consideration than just your search history.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's not to say AI will evolve into that kind of super intelligence that everybody's giving you credit for. But at the base of AI right now is still human error. So if you don't ask it the right questions, you're not going to get the answers you're looking for. If you don't give it the right prompts, you're not going to get the images you want to create. And so there's still a human factor to that.
Okay.
So social media, with these laws that they're trying to regulate, I think they're going to run up against certainly freedom of speech is going to be right there at the forefront. And I think when, again, the Supreme Court gets done looking at it, it's going to be like, yep, we can't really, beyond your basic hate speech, I think their hands are tied.
You just opened a very, very deep hole. I didn't even see it coming. And you're right. Some of the guesswork about what the Supreme Court might focus on in looking at those laws does dot back to First Amendment freedom of speech for the companies exercising their right to curate the content on their platforms. But here, let me give you an analogy. We can beat this up a little bit. The Copyright and Trademark Office is going through a suspected fairly wrenching process of saying, can copyright be extended to something that an AI comes up with? I suspect the answer is going to be no. It's already looking like the answer is no. I'm good with that answer being no, right? If something was created by a human being, it deserves that protection. Created by a machine, not. If a company is outsourcing their content curation to algorithms, what the heck does that have to do with free speech? You're giving the algorithm free speech?
I would hope that even if you're utilizing AI to do your content creation, that there are still human eyes falling on this for accuracy. Mm. AI is not flawless. Mm-hmm. Some of the information that comes up, it just pulls out of thin air. Based on things it has scoured. So at the end of the day, you're still responsible. I would say that the company is still responsible. The individual company that's utilizing the curation process of an AI mm-hmm. program is still responsible for oversight of what is being put forward.
So the argument would be that what's okay, not okay, what's promoted, what's not promoted is an exercise of free speech by that company.
It is an exercise of free speech, but it's on them, the responsibility to regulate themselves.
Okay. I mean, I wonder if someone's going to explore that, that dividing line between is there human judgment involved or not, but probably above our pay grade. Going back to your coffee shop analogy for a second, I'm continually of a couple of minds about social media, aside from the fact that I find it mostly noise and irk. The heavy hand of algorithms in promotion, not promotion, in selection, in creation of filter bubbles, it feels like anybody who's working with social media as part of their business and marketing strategy is as much in a fight to play keep up with the algorithms as to actually connect with their customers.
So here's the flip side or the positive side, I would say, of AI and marketing is that it is more curated than ever before.
Okay.
So you're getting a lot more drilled down, accurate ads based on behaviors and speech, because they're constantly listening, even if you're shutting your mic off on all your apps, there's still conversations being had where you're not aware that they're being read, or I won't even say read, we'll say absorbed into that cyborg that is AI.
Okay.
So the marketing that a lot of people are receiving now or should be receiving is more geared specific to the interests of the person more than ever before. It used to be you would throw stuff at the wall and hope it sticks, right? But now you can really take and drill down your messaging to very minutia and specifics because your audience is more cold.
It's more cold and more targeted. Okay, so take that premise and let me push back just for conversational fun. If I didn't say you can absorb these things about me, isn't that a fundamental invasion of my privacy to be more targeted?
The minute you signed up for Facebook, you gave up that privacy because they did not charge you. They did not ask you. You chose to sign up.
But your example was, you know, even conversations you don't realize are being observed right?
Right. But here's the thing. So Facebook is free. Where is the payoff for the company? It's the data.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's the data that you willingly put up when you put up that picture of the new house that you bought, when you put up the picture of the new car you got, you are feeding the data machine. You're giving them the information, even if you don't even think about it. Every time you play one of those games, it's like, is your birth month? They are taking apart every little minutia of data you're giving them by saying, yes, I was born in June. Because you played some stupid game, right? Or it said, give us your birth date and we'll tell you your five top traits. People do this all the time. And they're giving away information all the time.
You just articulated well why I'm not on Facebook, by the way. No, seriously, Mark Zuckerberg can go suck it. Right? I'm not on, I don't have a login, and he has no right to my data, free or not. But your argument seems to be that if someone signs up, they said it's okay to take all that data. Do they know that's what they're doing?
They did not when they did it back in 20s, in 06 and 07, and we were all getting on. And here's a funny story. I didn't get on Facebook in 06. I was like, why would anybody care what I'm doing right at this moment?
Yeah.
And now I have this huge social footprint, of course, because business-wise, it makes sense.
Sure.
But at the beginning of all this, I was like, oh, it's free. I'm going to sign up. Oh, I get to see all my classmates. And it was a great connector at first. And then the Zuck went, oh, by the way, there's data.
Yeah.
And data means money.
Yeah.
I don't even think he realized at the conception of it how much information he was going to be able to pull.
Yeah. I think you're probably right. Got to take your hat off in at least a narrow capitalist sense at the success of that enterprise, measured by stock valuation or whatever you want. Are we hitting a point where we should be saying, I did actually think you were going to do that much, and maybe it's too far. We should push back and rein it in with law.
Well, here's the thing. They have the GDPR, and people have to opt in to get information for you to utilize their information.
Yeah.
Congress has yet to put a bill together.
Yeah.
Anywhere close to what the GDPR is. And it's a very regulated over in Europe. And privacy is, but you know, they've gone beyond just the privacy. There's email laws, you know, where you can't expect an employee to open an email on a week. I mean, there's all kinds of protections.
Right.
And I think they were very proactive and got ahead of it. The US is still kind of Wild West kind of internet. You're still,
it is and it isn't. We've been passing state level privacy laws, some with substantial teeth, at a very rapid clip in the last 3-4 years. I had a guest on this podcast, Reed Freeman from Errant Fox, privacy expert lawyer, and he started listing off the state level privacy laws, and some of them, California in particular, Washington's for unusual reason, are like, they've got some teeth, but because they're not federal yet, not necessarily what we want. And maybe a function of a Congress that doesn't actually pass anything, not the expressed will of the people, but the U.S. as an expert in this space, think we'd be better off if we had a new set of boundaries around that collection and use of personal data.
I do. And I'm shooting myself in the foot, because who benefits from data more than a marketing person, right? That's gold to us. It's the gold standard.
Yeah.
So, of course, I want to know everything about my potential customer's customer.
Yeah.
I want to be able to say their luxury travel, their this, their that, their double income theft. I need all of that in order to gear my marketing toward them. Absolutely. But at the end of the day, at what cost, at what expense? And it's the privacy of the people.
It's a privacy of the people for consumer focused marketing in particular. I want to pivot to talk about email, but before I do that, I want to backtrack a little bit on what you do for business customers. Like, What's the balancing act when you get a, when you've got a business that's one of your clients, of what you're doing that's helping them understand their customers, what you're doing that's helping them understand and use the channels that reach their customers, if my distinction makes sense?
So one of the first things I do when I have a new client is I sit down and I ask them, who's the person you're trying to reach?
Mm-hmm.
Describe them to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you ever took an acting class, but when you did character development, you had to think about all of the past or how that character was raised in order to create the character that you were doing in your performance, right? Because mm-hmm. all of that comes along. Say when you're looking at a potential client, you need to understand, who am I trying to reach? So for instance, I have a new client that he builds these A-frame lifts for HVACs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Who do you think I'm supposed to be looking at? And then I have to take it a step further. So he was like, well, commercial roofing companies, because they have to move these big HVAC systems. I'm like, okay, who else? And he was like, I said, well, you know, we need to look at commercial real estate managers and all of that that goes with that. And then you have to drill down. You want, you know, building maintenance directors and facility managers and all of these things. So that's where that data comes into hand, right? Because when I go to create the ad campaign for them, mm-hmm. I'm looking at people's behaviors online, and that's where that data is most helpful. And that's how Facebook makes its money.
Okay. Yeah. And in the case of advertising channels like Facebook ads, you essentially you're going to help them get more efficient about that spend.
Right.
Well, I understand their customer better, but they're going to be paying over and over at a rate set by Facebook.
Yes. And it used to be Facebook can, they get smart every now and then.
Sure.
They used to be, you could do a $25 ad and you would get any range of traction on that.
Mm-hmm.
But now they cut you off. They're like, nope, we said you were going to get 1,200 views. That's all you're getting. And as soon as you hit that number, they're done pushing your ad out there.
Right.
And they're like, oh, but for another $15, we'll get you another 2,000 reach. It locked right now.
Yeah. Carnival barkers will never die, right?
Never.
Okay. Do new customers, new clients, I'll try and keep consistent terminology there. Do they actually know their customer base very well when they come in to talk to you?
For the most part, yeah. They understand. There are moments where they're like, well, I just know I created this widget. That's your job. You have to figure out how to sell my widget.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I can do that. But I need to have back and forth with you, and I need you to tell me, because I can pull anything out of my, but I want to make sure that I'm doing it in a manner that is going to be beneficial to the client.
Would it be fair to say, because this sounded like your A-frame customer example, they may have one persona in mind, but it's not necessarily the totality of their addressable market for their particular solution?
And that's correct. And I think most people will think, well, I never thought of that. I mean, that comes out of people's mouths all the time. I just just didn't think of it, because they're already in their bubble.
Mm-hmm.
And they've had success in this track.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they don't realize just a 2% differential gets you three more tracks.
Right. Hold them more. Yeah. Potentially whole new markets. Okay. Keep that as a frame, and let's switch to talking about email a little bit. I'm going to pick on you. You made a bit of a face when we were talking before we hit record. Email, not your favorite channel. You words to that effect, right?
It's not.
How come?
That's not to say that we don't create email blasts for people. I feel like, okay, we have less attention span than a goldfish, most people.
Mm-hmm.
And what is an email blast? For the most part, it's reading. if you don't capture them in those first three lines, your email is gone. So now we go to video email, right? We have emails coming in. As soon as you open it, as soon as it pops up, you've got somebody talking to you.
Yeah, okay. That doesn't actually technically work on a reliable basis.
No, it doesn't. So for me, yes, email is one of those cogs that you have to grease and utilize, but it's only one small percentage of the overall marketing strategy.
And fundamental, I think I heard you say that the fundamental issue because of shorter attention spans is that written copy is not as effective a tool for capturing
as it used to be
attention as it used to be. Yeah, that's fair. Sidebar, for what it's worth, the email marketing pundits and writers of substantial books on email that I've had on the podcast would say email blast is a very dated term. It's the wrong approach. Because if you think of it as a blast and that's how you're doing it, that's why you get the result you get. But personalization, personalized content is a pretty heavy lift on email as well. One of the virtues of email as a channel is that if you've gotten enough interest for someone to sign up, you're not paying a gatekeeper for their attention over and over after that. So from that perspective, like long-term efficiency for people who are actually interested in your offer, not just attention, but actual interest, it's a potentially hyper-efficient channel for that at least on a cost basis, because there's no gatekeeper.
I would agree with that. My whole thing with, and this is just a personal thing for me, I hate email.
Yeah.
Absolutely hate email.
Because you get too much of it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I get a lot of unsolicited email requests.
Yeah.
So for me, it's just like that flat, you know, like.
Yeah. No, I mean.
Batting it away.
Any professional, especially if you run a company, you get in and there is as yet no magic filter on the inbox that says, no, just show me stuff from where I actually said I want to get it.
Right.
I don't know that anybody will ever come up with that magic filter. My start in the inbox in the morning, true story. I know the keystrokes. I couldn't tell you them. My fingers know them, but I know the keystrokes to say, select all unread messages. So I'm only seeing those on the screen and they're selected. And then I go through and I unselect the ones from people I actually recognize and I delete the rest. Like start of the day is, I don't know, to probably 90% of the things that hit my inbox. So I certainly understand why I hate email. But there are emails that I actually always unselect because I know I'm going to read them because I value the content or the relationship or I'm interested in the company or something like that. And for them, that particular channel is a really efficient way of staying connected with me and vice versa. As a strategic fit in a larger, or as a tactical fit in a larger marketing strategy, There's a place for the email function. It's just fighting a hell of a lot of noise is kind of what you're saying.
It really is. And that's not to say, I'm not saying don't utilize email because you absolutely have to.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying it is just yet one of the other components or cogs on the wheel for an overall marketing strategy.
Yeah.
Because people need to hit and you need to hit that client at different points in their day and in different ways. Whether it's a video on YouTube, it's an email blast, it's a direct mail marketing piece, all of those things start to build and play a part in making that connection for you to where they finally go, okay, I'm going to hear read the email because I've seen it 16 times in my box.
Yeah, brand awareness or whatever you call
it. But today's the day I'm ready to hear that message.
Yeah. Takes a lot of repeat feeding to get the attention of the goldfish.
It does.
you've got a specific interest in video content as a piece of marketing, marketing strategy, I think, right?
I do. I think that, well, video is key. And I think part of that is because people, as I said before, don't want to read, for the most part. They want it fed to them. And if you can do that in the most entertaining way, you get them to stay on that video for a minute and a half, and it's not counted as a bounce, and it helps your algorithms, and mm-hmm. the Google gods allow you to move up in ranking because it's indexed you because that video played.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Most video content sucks. Sucks. It's mostly unscripted, talking head, specialist drivel, and yet we're still doing it.
It's going to get more refined because of AI, and people don't actually have to put their face up there, but can utilize their voice. Oh, I think it's companies. I think Soros, which they're is in beta right now. Yeah, they're not releasing it completely. I think the fact that you can create a talking head and still get your point, I promise. Yes, I think video is just going to get, and the thing is, the quality of the video that's being made now by AI is improved. No longer the six fingers, three eyes, and the mouth is on the side of the head. It's getting more refined. It may not be on its peak just yet, but in a few years, you're not going to be able to tell the difference between you and I talking and a generated AI video of the same conversation.
You spent some time in theater, right?
I have spent time.
Do you remember Aristotle's formulation of the six components of drama?
Not off the top of my head.
Aristotle poetics, plot, character, theme, diction, music, spectacle. All you described is improved spectacle. Better production values doesn't equal better dramatic structure or any of the above. And I don't see how he's going to prove those things.
I will respectfully disagree. I think that in the hand of the right person or people who are skilled at giving the correct prompts to the AI, it will be fine-tuned to a point where it'll be just as human as human.
Okay. We'll have to agree to disagree, and you didn't address my Aristotle question.
I would say,
What can AI improve aside from spectacle, which is production values in that formulation from the poetics?
I think production value. I think the imagery. I think the poetry. I think you will see it come around. Is it there right today? No. But I think it's coming.
Well, we've talked about AI a lot. Interesting, given how relatively, I know it's an important shift, and it's not a new technology. That's key, but still pretty. Let me say this as carefully as I can. Results not at all comparable to results from a skilled person. It's just a shortcut on cost right now. Is that fair?
That is fair.
And you think the shortcut will get closer and closer to the quality of what a person could do, possibly even surpass it. Okay. Yeah.
I don't think it's a today thing. I don't think it's a tomorrow thing, but a near future thing.
Here's a different observation. One of the surprises in the landscape of generative AI, which is what's on most people's top of mind when they use the term AI, is that Meta, the company behind Facebook, invested pretty significantly in development of a Gen AI model called Llama, and they chose to release it as open source, not keep it as a pay us to generate content, which is essentially what OpenAI is doing with ChatGPT. I'm curious your reaction to this. When I talked about that with friends and colleagues and started thinking about the impact of open source AI models being downloadable, changeable, anyone who can code can use them. What's Meta's motive for turning that machine loose? And I think the shorter answer is the more law, the more content, the better from Facebook's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And quality of that content doesn't particularly matter to them.
It doesn't. And it's not the quality, it's the information they get from it.
The information they get from what?
From what people are creating.
Creating or engaging?
Both.
Okay.
Because you're creating something in this open network, right? You're putting in information there. Whether it's visual information.
If it's an open source model that I'm running, there's no data transmission to Meta. It's an important distinction. They're not saying use our machine running a model. They're saying, here's the model, run it on your own machine. Why would they do that?
They want to see how it gets used.
They wouldn't know how it gets used. It's open source.
How do you know if they're not going to know how it gets used?
Pretty easy to monitor the network input output from a model.
Nothing.
Yeah. See, I think this is my speculation. That's why it's one of the reasons I was curious to talk to you, because you know more about a whole lot more about space than I do. I think more easily produced content is likely to be better from Facebook's point of view. It's like if anyone can run a Tinker Toy AI and make yet another post graphic, yet another eventually video, yet another written post, it's more likely to land on one of their platforms than anything else. It's like it just makes it easier for people to sit in the coffee shop, your formulation, with their thumbs and say, look what I did, or yeah, this is how I'm feeling today, or whatever. So we'll get more views, and it essentially becomes we're feeding that particular commons yet more stuff. Okay, park that one for a second. TikTok, where's that fit in the world these days for businesses that are like clients for pace setting media?
TikTok is having, I think, a bit of an identity crisis. First of all, they're getting sued left and right, copyright infringement. And so they've tried to tap down on the use of music, and that's halting a lot of the generation that made TikTok what it is, right? The younger generation with the dances and all of the caca that they put up there. So the other thing that's happening on TikTok is that the Gen Xers have moved in.
Mm-hmm.
And just like they did on Facebook, they've taken over, and businesses are starting to utilize it a lot more. And affiliate marketing is a huge, to me, problem, because every other TikTok, where it used to be this mindless rabbit hole of a scroll of this one dancing and that one singing and whatever, it's now add. Oh, here's something funny. Ad
ratio's gone up. Interesting.
It's gone up horrendously. And though I think it's still a decent tool to use for business, I would kind of steer away from it unless you're an artist, unless your content is of the visual nature and it makes sense that a 10-second clip is going to get you more eyes than, say, Facebook. Then you always remember, the demographics for each platform is changing depending on what time you're there. Mm-hmm. So during the day, it's Gen X. Middle of the night, it's millennials and Zoomers, right? So it really depends on the audience that you're trying to hit. Facebook has gotten middle-aged. It's your late millennials. It's your Gen Xers and your boomers. Mm-hmm. Your LinkedIn profile, that's strictly business. That's strictly showing your expertise in your industry. That's B2B. You're not going to see anybody. Well, you will not see people putting up stupid stuff on LinkedIn, but they get shot down a lot faster on LinkedIn, going, that's not this platform.
Yeah.
You need to go over to Facebook with that, right?
Yeah.
So you still have to know the...
One sec. Had a Zoom did a little spit up here. Are you still hearing me?
Yes.
Okay, cool. We'll edit that. It sounds like your A-frame HVAC market person is not going to spend any time on TikTok for their business.
No.
Sounds like LinkedIn might actually be a more effective channel for
that. LinkedIn is definitely where we're going to focus.
Yeah, okay. Have you found LinkedIn getting noisier?
It is a little bit noisier, but I think that's more of people trying to create their personal brands noise as opposed to the nonsense of TikTok and the feel good of Facebook.
Yeah. 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 The personal brand thing does seem to be a driver on LinkedIn.
Yes.
Like I get conceptually why it's important, but it seems to me not a scalable thing. If everyone's a personal brand, we're right back at ground zero. Used to be called your character, I believe, somewhere back in history. Yes. Sounds like LinkedIn is sort of in scope because you do have B2B customers, though, in scope of your services. Okay. I have been pleasantly surprised that Microsoft, it was a $25 billion purchase when they bought LinkedIn. They seem to have left it alone. Like, you don't see a Microsoft footprint per se, at least explicitly.
For the most part, on the back end for the marketer, there's a lot more hoops to jump through than used to have to jump through.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, we haven't used marketer's tool set on LinkedIn. We've just participated, for lack of a better label, on LinkedIn. You know, you got to get your headshot, got to get the logo there, all of that, all that stuff. And actually, LinkedIn is the primary outlet for Future of Email, aside from the podcast on networks, I guess, for lack of a better label. We always post episodes like this one on LinkedIn because people who are interested in marketing or email or digital marketing or whatever are likely to be there.
Yes.
Yeah. Seems like a professional fit. What about podcasts? Is that something that you touch at all with clients?
I do. We will do your intro, outro. We will do the editing and we will get it posted on Buzzsprout and on the other networks for you.
Okay. Effective. It seems like a mysterious landscape. Like I know there's some data back from podcasts, but it's hard to get a feel for, aside from the few big podcasts you can name, whether or not there's critical mass for many of them.
I think that it's definitely a community that has space to grow. Some of it is just the entertainment value as the networks kind of crumbled, by television networks. So people are getting their information and their entertainment in other ways from streaming, and podcasts are one of those entertaining alleys that people are going into.
Yeah. Particularly good, I think, for the fill time. You know, I'm walking to this, I'm driving to that, I'm whatever. I mean, at least audio, specifically the audio component of a podcast. There are some podcasters that have acquired a sizable audience, so obviously it can be made to work. Seems like edgy is a reasonably good asset in getting a podcast to work.
Well, you know, it gets ratcheted up, and you see this especially in politics. They have to keep outdoing each other. And same thing with any of these, with YouTube, with podcasts. Everybody's going to have to keep upping their game in order to maintain that audience.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. We're already having the goldfish compression. It sounds like that's what I'm looking for. You said ratchet up. Like, how much outrage do we have left to squeeze out of everybody is a way to state the concern.
Right. And then you get to the point down the outrage and everybody's just mentally exhausted. And you swing all the way to this side and now you got happy news. And I'm going to watch this. I'm going to listen to this because I'm tired of the negative and I'm looking for something uplifting and happy. And I just don't want to hear about the darkness anymore.
Yeah. I mean, arguably, probably one of the unsung uses of streaming media is that kind of cognitive relief valve, right? I've done it, you know, hey, do you want to watch something tonight, honey? Yeah, but I'd prefer that it be funny or, you know, friendly or something, because I've had enough outrage.
Right.
Today. Yeah. It'd be interesting to find a way to analyze that. I think it'd be tough, but it'd be interesting.
I think one of the, you know, reality shows, especially on Netflix, that's my dark secret, is I'm watching, you know, Love is Blind and all these stupid reality love shows because it's just, I don't have to think, right? I don't have to think. I can sit there, I can laugh at the situation. Like, that wouldn't be me or whatever. And I don't have to contemplate how heavy this is. Now, there are shows on Netflix now that are like suspenseful, especially the British suspense where you have to figure out the pieces. And I have literally said to my husband, I can't watch that tonight. I don't have the brain power.
Yes, me too. Me too.
That's going to make me think too hard. Right. I don't want to watch it.
Right. I think not on the list after my son or something like. And I mean, we've always wanted some sort of relief valve. Arguably, network television did that for multiple generations as well. But being able to pick your relief valve is more accessible than it was to previous generations. Well, what's the ideal new client for Pace Setting Media?
I would say it's a middle-sized company. They've got a few employees, and the owner is looking to take some things off their plate.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Yeah. They're looking to put that social media hat or marketing onto somebody else's head so that they can work on their business, not in their business.
Gotcha. Yeah,
so
I like that.
They're definitely, it's not the startup. They don't have the funds for it, and they don't see the value in writing that check.
Right.
So the client I'm looking for is a medium-sized, relatively young, but growing company.
Okay.
That wants to take some of this stuff off their plate and go, okay, you're going to be our marketing department. Here you go. Outsource some service.
Here you go. Do you find companies whose products or services lend themselves to media or are inherently visual to be easier to work with in social media channels?
I love a challenge. Just like my eighth grade guy, I was like, okay, I haven't done that before. Let's see what I can do.
That's what you can do.
That's it. So I do love a challenge, but I have everything from a country music singer to A-frame to restaurant, medical facilities. I mean, I'm running the gamut.
Yeah, quite a bit.
I like the mix because it doesn't get stale and it keeps me and my team constantly thinking.
Got it. I like it. That sounds like a lot more rewarding way to spend your week than traveling and waiting for the phone to ring and how do I get back home, right?
Yeah.
Congrats for you. Well, Wendy, it's been a gas talking with you. We kind of wandered all over the place, didn't we?
Thank you. I've enjoyed it. I love the challenge. Bring it. Let's go.
Bring it. Where does someone find you if a prospective customer happens to listen to this podcast?
Well, as everybody can tell, I am in a large social media footprint, much larger than it will be when I retire.
Yeah.
But I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Facebook. They can hit me up on any of those, or they can go to just send me an email at wendy@paysettingmedia.com.
Perfect. Wendy, thanks again. We're out.
Thanks.